This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode from the midweek edition of the Coin Bureau podcast. My name is Guy, and every week I pick out two of my favorite videos from Coin Bureau's YouTube channel to present to you in podcast form. The audio you're about to hear is from those videos I've chosen this week. Many of you have been in touch to ask whether it's possible to listen to our videos in podcast format, and so your wish is my command. This week, I've selected our videos on the efforts by a number of governments to restrict retail traders' access to cryptocurrency and Ethereum's upcoming merge event, which is scheduled for mid-September. In the first part of today's episode, we look at how nothing seems to irk the rich and powerful more than when the ordinary person in the street is able to speculate on high-risk and high-reward assets. Now, you may already be familiar with the term accredited investor. If you're not, it basically means someone rich. In the US and elsewhere, only these rich, accredited investor types are able to buy stocks before they list on the open market or invest in companies at the early stages of their development. This is how they're able to bank serious returns on those investments further down the line. This is all done in the name of investor protection, but it really just helps the rich stay that way while the rest of us fight for the scraps of what's left. This is the way things have been since the Great Depression of the 1930s. However, retail investors have recently begun fighting back, and nowhere was this better seen than with the GameStop saga in early 2021. Here, a coordinated group of investors banded together on Reddit to pump the stock price of an ailing video game retailer. The resulting price surge left many hedge funds, which had shorted the stock, severely out of pocket, and many rich and powerful people disconcerted. Moves were quickly made to prevent such a thing happening again, and now the sights of lawmakers are being turned on cryptocurrency, which is perhaps the very definition of high risk and high reward. Countries from Canada to China are now starting to limit how much crypto ordinary folks can buy, and many others are taking notes. Then, in the second part of today's episode, you'll hear all the latest about Ethereum's upcoming transition from proof of work to proof of stake, one of the most significant events in the whole history of cryptocurrency, and one that has been a long time coming. The implications of this switch are huge for Ethereum and indeed the whole crypto industry, and after many delays, it's almost upon us. I'll explain exactly where we are in terms of what is supposed to happen, what it all means, and what to look out for as the big day approaches. I hope you enjoy listening to these two pieces, and I'll be back talking crypto with Mad Mike very soon, so be sure to stay tuned. And if you want even more content from Coin Bureau, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and visit us on social media too. Recently, the Ontario Securities and Exchange Commission set an annual limit on how much regular Canadians living in the province can invest in altcoins. Although this annual limit is not a federal law, it is part of a growing trend to restrict retail investors from cryptocurrency, both in Canada and elsewhere. Today, I'm going to tell you why so many countries are starting to make it difficult for retail investors to access cryptocurrency and what effects this could have on the crypto market. Now, I want to start by taking you back in time to the 1920s. It's after the First World War, and the economies of allied countries are booming. In the United States, the stock market is roaring to all-time highs, and millions of Americans are investing their life savings into stocks, with many of them borrowing to invest even more. Fast forward to 1929. The economy is suddenly not looking so good, and the amount of debt that's been taken on by speculators has hit record highs. But the stock market keeps pumping, so it's totally fine. Suddenly, the stock market begins to dip, and everyone who took on excessive leverage begins to sell, fearing that they wouldn't have enough to pay back all their debts. By October, the stock market is in freefall, with a famous four-day flash crash bringing the Dow Jones down by a staggering 30%. Over the next 2 years, the stock market goes on to fall by another 80%, bringing the Dow Jones to a low of 900 points, a far cry from its high of nearly 6,000 points. Naturally, the people in power blame the average person for the stock market implosion, and the US government subsequently establishes the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, in 1934, to make sure another stock market crash of that magnitude never happens again. Upon its creation, the SEC was tasked with three specific things: protect investors, facilitate capital formation, and maintain fair, orderly, and efficient markets. You'll know this if you've ever watched current SEC Chairman Gary Gensler speak. More about what that looks like in the description. To that end, the SEC set a series of regulations that made it very difficult for regular investors to get access to high-risk investments, such as real estate crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, aka investing in stocks before they list, hedge funds, and any form of venture capital, aka early company investing. As some of you will know, only so-called accredited investors are allowed to invest in these high-risk vehicles. And as far as I understand, this has been the case in the United States since 1933, when the Securities Act was passed as part of the SEC's formation. Today, almost every country has specific criteria for what counts as an accredited investor. In the United States, you need to either make more than $200,000 per year, have a net worth of more than $1 million, excluding your primary residence, or be an executive in a company that's selling its equity. Fun fact, there is actually no test to become an accredited investor, at least not in the United States. Your status as an accredited investor is determined on a case-by-case basis by the company that's offering the asset you're trying to invest in, be it a hedge fund or otherwise. Now, as all of you will know, there's no risk without reward, hence why this accredited investor scheme has been heavily criticized. Besides the fact that wealth isn't the best measure of knowledge or intelligence, the fact that these opportunities are only afforded to the rich means they only get richer. Take a second to consider that many accredited investors have made 100x gains on regular stocks because they were able to buy before they listed. Never mind the multiple 1000x gains that VCs have made on many cryptocurrencies by buying before they were readily available. Meanwhile, retail investors are lucky to get the estimated average of 10% per year on stocks, which is barely enough to hedge against official inflation figures. Never mind that the unofficial inflation figures suggest that it's twice as bad as it's being made out to be by politicians and the mainstream media. So, now that you know about the history of retail investors and accredited investors, it's time to jump back in the time machine and turn the clock back from today by about 2.5 years. It's the beginning of the pandemic, and nobody knows whether it's the return of the Black Death or just another flu. The scale of the uncertainty is causing stock markets to tank, and the urgency is forcing elected officials to shut everything down out of caution. To ensure that the economy doesn't completely implode, central banks drop interest rates to zero, and governments start sending out stimmy checks. Around the world, millions of people suddenly find themselves sitting on more money than they had expected, mainly because there isn't really anything they can spend their money on besides food and rent, assuming their rent payments aren't paused, which was apparently the case in many places. After binge-watching Netflix and completing every video game that's worth the effort, millions of people start to wonder what they can do next and notice that the stock market is rapidly recovering. And so, they download an app like Robinhood and start reading about investing on Reddit. Fast forward to 2021. The number of Robinhood users has more than doubled to over 20 million. The Wall Street Bets subreddit has ballooned to over 10 million members, and retail investors make up more than 30% of the quarterly trading volume in the US stock market, a record high. Realizing that high risk is the only way to get a high reward, millions of newly created retail investors start shoving their stimmy checks and savings into cryptocurrencies, volatile commodities, and tech stocks with extreme leverage. As in the 1920s, many of them go into debt to invest even more. Then the retail investors realize something. If they coordinate their collective investments, they can create the kind of volatility that's required for massive returns. And so, the so-called retail apes pick a target, Melvin Capital, a hedge fund that's aggressively shorting GameStop, a video game retailer. Now, for some context, shorting a stock typically involves borrowing it from a stockbroker and immediately selling it on the open market while promising to buy back and return the shares at some future date. The assumption is that the stock will be cheaper at that future date and the difference becomes profit. What retail investors did in January 2021 was collectively buy GameStop stock so that its price went up. This forced Melvin Capital into a short squeeze, forcing the hedge fund to buy back the stock at a loss worth billions of dollars, which caused GME to pump even more. As it happens, Melvin Capital announced in May this year that it was going out of business, citing the meme stock short squeeze as the main reason. As almost all of you will know, GME wasn't the only time that this collective investment strategy was tried. There were attempts to pump other stocks like Tesla, precious metals like silver, and yes, cryptocurrencies like Dogecoin. Those who were able to ride the waves of volatility became incredibly wealthy, and most of the rest got wrecked. Now, there is definitely a discussion to be had about this practice, but I reckon it's one of the only ways that retail investors can create the same risk-reward dynamic afforded to accredited investors. What's crazy is that most of these campaigns were successful, and collective action by retail investors continues to this day. A great example is Celsius's Sell token, which has seen multiple short squeezes since the crypto platform went bankrupt. You can find out what happened there and what comes next for Celsius users by clicking the link in the description. Now, it's safe to say that the people in power weren't happy about the GameStop saga. I mean, it basically marked the first time that retail investors were able to extract billions of dollars from the accredited investors. Historically, it's happened the other way around. This is arguably the real reason why Robinhood went as far as blocking the purchase of meme stocks to prevent more collective investment from moving the market, something that came as a huge surprise to its users and isn't really in keeping with what the platform calls itself, is it? What's not that surprising is that one of the most popular members of the Wall Street Bets subreddit was subsequently sued for allegedly coordinating the manipulation of GameStop stock, causing, quote, huge losses for select investors. I think you can guess who one of those select investors was. Luckily, it seems the lawsuit was dismissed the following month, but this fellow was still hit with a $4 million fine for failing to disclose his GameStop trades to his previous employer, a fine which was reportedly paid by his insurance company. The real trouble, however, came in April 2021, after Gary Gensler was made chairman of the SEC. If you watched our video about Gary and the SEC, you might recall that the first thing he did was announce that he would be going after Robinhood and other retail trading platforms. Specifically, Gary said the SEC would be going after the practice of payment for order flow, which I won't get into here for the sake of time, but feel free to watch my video from last year, which breaks it down into detail for you. Top left. Anyways, a couple of months ago, Gary reiterated the SEC's intentions to crack down on payment for order flow, and according to crypto policy analyst Jake Chavinsky, the SEC is likely to take a lot of enforcement actions near the end of September as its fiscal year comes to a close, given that it has historically done this. In Europe, meanwhile, politicians are pushing an outright ban on payment for order flow, and it seems there's only one thing holding them and the SEC back: public opinion. The average retail investor would probably rather not see their favorite stock trading platform go down the toilet. This is especially true because it seems that most retail investors are still heavily invested. According to a recent press release by trading platform eToro, only 8% of retail investors sold when the crypto and stock markets crashed in May and June. 64% continued to hodl, and 28% bought the dip. Wild. Now, while eToro is just one trading platform, I reckon it's reasonable to assume that it's a similar story on others, especially since another analysis by the Wall Street Journal recently found that retail investors continue to pour record amounts of money into the market. This is believed to be because retail investors can see that the market's quickly recovered after all recent crashes, and many of them are still in the green overall due to the appreciation of house prices and other assets they own. In other words, retail investors haven't capitulated. Yet. That last word is key because it suggests that the stock market is headed lower, and all the bearish macro factors certainly suggest this is the case. So, riddle me this. What happens when the stock market crashes by another 20, maybe even 30%, while all other assets where the middle class store their wealth, like houses and cars, start to crash too? That's right, you're going to have lots of retail investors demanding regulation and retribution. If you need any evidence of this order of events, look no further than the crypto market. Since the crypto market crash in May, we've seen no shortage of lawsuits alleging that certain cryptocurrencies are securities, that certain exchanges engaged in market manipulation, and other such shenanigans. More importantly, we've seen countries around the world announce that they're going to start clamping down on crypto, or to use their words, quote, protect investors, which is of course code for preventing retail investors from accessing certain coins, tokens, and investment vehicles. The first country to restrict retail access to cryptocurrency was actually the United Kingdom in October 2020, when our fabulous Financial Conduct Authority, or FCA, banned the sale of crypto derivatives to retail consumers. This included stuff like futures, options, and even ETNs, which are like ETFs. For reference, derivatives allow retail investors to take on the same kind of risks that accredited investors regularly take, but it also adds a lot of volatility to the crypto market when overleveraged long or short traders are liquidated. More about that in the description. I digress. In 2021, we saw Hong Kong regulators propose banning retail investors from the crypto market, and a few months later, China began its latest crypto crackdown, which likely affected most retail investors and likely left many wealthy, aka accredited investors, unscathed. Following the crypto market crash that was caused by China's crackdown, we saw regulators increase their scrutiny of the crypto industry by forcing KYC on exchanges, banning tokens pegged to stocks, restricting derivatives trading, and presumably pushing exchanges to reduce the leverage they offer. Following the crypto market crash this year that was caused by Terra's collapse, we saw regulators return with the same scrutiny, with Dutch authorities calling for crypto derivatives to be restricted to accredited investors, and Australian banks saying they will not, quote, endorse retail speculation. In South Korea, regulators announced they would be cracking down on crypto exchanges because of Terra's collapse. Terra was from South Korea. And regulators in Thailand demanding that crypto exchanges delist meme coins, NFTs, and social tokens. More recently, Singapore announced it wants to limit retail crypto investment, and as I mentioned in the introduction, in Canada, the Ontario SEC set an annual limit of $30,000 Canadian dollars on altcoin investments for citizens of the province, which presumably excludes accredited investors. I'll reiterate that most, if not all, these restrictions are being encouraged, if not outright called for, by disgruntled cryptocurrency investors, and I'll caution that it's more than likely that we're going to see the crypto market go much lower later this year, along with the stock market. When this inevitably happens, you can bet that there will be even more calls for crypto regulation and retribution, most of which will inevitably result in retail investors like you and me having even less access to cryptocurrencies and all the different ways you can trade them. What's even more concerning is that this will make it that much more difficult for new crypto projects to get off the ground, since they'll be more exclusive to accredited investors than ever before. Not only that, but it will be even more difficult for quality crypto projects to be created, because all of them will have massive pre-mines, with most of the supply going to VCs and early investors. In short, cutting retail investors out of the crypto market could do serious damage to the potential of the entire industry, and this begs the question of where this push to remove retail investors is coming from, and what you can do to keep your head in the game for as long as possible. If you watched our video about the top 10 crypto partnerships from last year, you might recall that New York Digital Investment Group, or NYDIG, and the National Cash Register, or NCR, entered a partnership to make it possible for commercial banks in the US to offer cryptocurrency investing and trading. This partnership happened because commercial banks could see that billions of dollars were flowing from their balance sheets into cryptocurrency exchanges, something they aren't happy about because playing with the money you've deposited in the bank is how commercial banks make their money. Commercial banks thought that offering cryptocurrency investing and trading in-house would bring back most, if not all, the money that had fled from their balance sheets to Coinbase, Robinhood, and others. And at first glance, this strategy makes sense. Upon closer inspection, there's a problem, though, and that's that commercial banks can't offer mid-cap and small-cap altcoins for regulatory reasons. By now, you should know that volatile altcoins are ultimately what attracts retail investors to Coinbase and Robinhood. They aren't there for BTC and ETH. Case in point, Dogecoin trading accounted for a whopping 40% of Robinhood's cryptocurrency revenue in the third quarter of last year, and almost 70% of trading volume on Coinbase was related to altcoins in the fourth quarter of last year. And never mind all the billions flowing into stablecoins. So, another question for you. What happens when your top competitors are offering a product that you can't possibly hope to offer? That's right, you throw your toys out the pram, go crying to the regulators, and rile up disgruntled retail investors by paying for mainstream media articles about how horrible cryptocurrency is. That's why I don't think it's a coincidence that the SEC is targeting altcoins and cryptocurrency exchanges offering said altcoins. Come to think of it, the real reason why the SEC went after XRP could have simply been because it was one of the most traded cryptocurrencies. Now, in case you didn't put two and two together, restricting retail investors from accessing altcoins and forcing cryptocurrency exchanges to delist altcoins is exactly how you drain the cryptocurrency exchanges dry. It's the only source of revenue that the commercial banks can't compete with. As I mentioned a few moments ago, it also has the convenient side effect of stunting crypto's growth and adoption. And I suspect that the few coins and tokens which survive the scourge will be those that accredited investors and Wall Street love the most. I think you know which ones I'm talking about. As far as I can tell, the only defense against this will be to stick to truly decentralized finance, which will continue to be accessible through various bridges and smart contract cryptocurrency coins, assuming the people in power don't take control of the proof-of-stake blockchains these DeFi protocols live on. And don't even get me started about how the Financial Action Task Force, or FATF, wants to eventually make it impossible for you to withdraw any crypto by labeling such activities as high risk. If you ask me, the real question is whether regulators will go as far as restricting retail access to other investments, such as stocks. History suggests that they will do exactly that if the market crash is bad enough, and the SEC is reportedly planning on changing the definition of accredited investor already. One thing's for sure, and that's that the people in power want to make sure that retail investors can't collectively pump stocks to the detriment of accredited investors ever again. Never mind that it could become a form of protest quite soon, since financial loss is the only language they understand. For what it's worth, we're unlikely to see a full-on retail trading ban, and that's simply because the World Economic Forum wants retail investors to put their stimmies, savings, and loans into ESG, which is really just the United Nations dystopian 2030 Sustainable Development Goals in disguise. You can learn more about the dangers of ESG using the link in the description.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
It's only a few weeks away. One of the most consequential crypto events to date is almost upon us. I am, of course, talking about the ETH merge, the long-awaited transition to a new consensus mechanism that could have massive implications for the Ethereum network. But there are also serious tail risks that you need to know about. So, in my video today, I'm going to give you an update on Ethereum, look at the bull and bear cases, and explain exactly what all this could mean for the price of ETH. So, don't go anywhere. Now, in case you've been living under a rock for the past year, and let's face it, rent rises are heading that way, you'll know that the Ethereum network is about to transition to proof of stake. The actual transition is called the merge, and it's the first step in a number of upgrades designed to make Ethereum more scalable and hence more usable. Now, I've covered the upgrades ad nauseum on the channel, and I'll link to a number of videos below that go into it in much more detail. Now, the merge has already been launched on a number of public Ethereum testnets. These include the likes of Ropsten, Sepolia, and most recently, Gurley. Gurley made the merge on the 10th of August, and while there was a slight drop in the participation rate, it still added up to another successful merge dress rehearsal. Things were going so well on the testnets that they've even gone through post-merge upgrades. Sepolia, for instance, recently underwent a simple yet important update. The stars appeared to be aligned, and following these successful testnet merges, we got the news that the actual merge could come even sooner, as the potential date for the big day was moved from the 19th of September to the 15th. This was great news for the Ethereum community, which has arguably grown a little jaded by all the memes of Ethereum merge delays, however hilarious some of them may be. Now, there is a bit of nuance here, of course, from the fact that the actual date is determined by blocks rather than the devs themselves. So, with that in mind, last week, the Ethereum Foundation disclosed the official parameters for the mainnet merge to take place. Firstly, on the 6th of September, the Bellatrix upgrade will be implemented. This is the upgrade that will be responsible for setting the rest of the merge process in motion. The next step after this will be the triggering total difficulty, or TTD, at this block over here. This could be reached anywhere between the 10th and the 20th, although the devs have given that narrower timeline between the 15th and 16th that I mentioned earlier. TTD is required because this is the mechanism that will make it unprofitable to mine the proof of work chain and thus force the merge. Now, if all this sounds sort of familiar, that's because TTD has also been rather more excitingly termed the difficulty bomb. Now, of course, many miners protested at this and threatened to fork and then mine a proof of work chain. However, these aspirations appear to have been short-lived, as stablecoin issuers like Circle and Tether signaled support for the proof of stake chain. Given how dependent DeFi is on stablecoins, this may be the death knell for any contentious forks. Okay, so that's where we're currently at with the merge and its timeline, and there's a lot of excitement around all this, no doubt about it. However, in the past few weeks, some of that excitement has turned to concern. Concern surrounding the concept of censorship. Allow me to explain. On the 8th of August, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, a department of the US Treasury, took the unprecedented step of sanctioning Code. And by that, I mean they officially placed the Tornado Cash smart contract on the Specially Designated Nationals and Blocked Persons, or SDN, list. I won't go into it in too much detail here, as I've covered it in much more depth in a previous video, and that will be in the top right. But the reason why this had such large implications for the Ethereum network, specifically around the merge, is how various stakeholders in the Ethereum ecosystem responded. You see, because the Tornado Cash smart contract was sanctioned, this meant that all of those users who had interacted with it could potentially be violating sanctions. All those dApps that allowed funds from the smart contract could be facilitating sanctions evasion. Even those miners who mined a block that had a Tornado Cash transaction in it could be falling foul of the law. The result was a lot of these services and companies blacklisting the addresses and restricting support for them. Examples include Uniswap, DYDX, and Aave blocking front-end access. Infura and Alchemy restricting access to their RPC nodes. Circle blacklisting all of the addresses that were associated with Tornado Cash. However, none of these threatened the immutability of the blockchain. That's until we learned that some miners, such as Ethermine, were censoring transactions at the protocol level. They stopped including Tornado Cash router transactions the moment that the sanctions were announced. This is particularly concerning for the merge because when Ethereum initially transitions, there will be a great deal of validator centralization. You can see exactly who the largest validators are over here: Coinbase, Binance, Kraken, and Lido Finance. Those validators based in the United States will have to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to censor transactions related to the Tornado Cash smart contract. If enough of them decide to do that, then you have censorship at the protocol level. Coinbase's CEO has said that if this hypothetical was a thing, then they would shut down their staking operations instead of censoring. We'll have to take his word for it on that. Now, even in the case of Lido, which is a DAO, a great many of its backers are US-based VCs. They may control a lot of the supply and hence vote within the DAO to censor these specific transactions. More signs of potential censorship on the proof-of-stake chain came when Flashbots, the developer behind MEV Boost, confirmed that they would be complying with the OFAC sanctions. To give some context, MEV Boost is an optional piece of software for the proof-of-stake chain, which will separate builders who create the blocks from the proposers who propagate those blocks. It's basically software that will help validators extract MEV, the extra income that validators can earn by strategically selecting the transactions that they add to a given block. Now, if this is confusing, I'll leave some resources about MEV in the description. Anyways, what the Flashbot devs were considering would be to censor the default relay that it used to pass pre-built blocks from builders to the proposers. However, the Flashbots would be coded to exclude those transactions involving addresses that are linked to Tornado Cash. This caused quite a backlash in the community, so much so that the devs decided that they should aim to get the code into the developers' hands earlier than planned so they can choose their own relayers. But the fact that developers of tools used in proof-of-stake Ethereum are already considering censorship has ruffled a few feathers. It was also a hot topic at the Ethereum Core Developers meeting on the 18th of August. Many of the developers on the call were adamant that the censorship-resistant qualities of the network should be upheld at all costs. For example, Marius van der Weeden said, quote, "If we allow censorship of user transactions on the network, then we basically failed. This is the hill that I'm willing to die on. If we start allowing users to be censored on Ethereum, then this whole thing doesn't make sense and I will be leaving the ecosystem." Despite this stance, though, it wasn't immediately clear what should be done before the merge in order to prevent the censorship risks I just mentioned. Some were calling for slashing of those validators that would censor transactions, called social slashing. Now, the best argument I've seen for this is by researcher and blogger Eric Wall. He makes the case for social slashing and an Ethereum user-activated soft fork. It's a really compelling piece, and I'll leave a link to it in the description. Eric even polled many in the Ethereum community as to whether they would support social slashing, and it seems as if most did support the idea. The VDOG himself also replied, saying that he too voted for it. So, it's clear, social slashing, right? Well, it's definitely not an ideal solution. You're effectively telling validators that they should risk violating sanctions or have their stake slashed. If these were the likes of exchanges, for example, then it's the innocent users who'll see their deposits lost. Moreover, there's a risk of a chain split if enough of the larger validators decide to go down the censorship route. Essentially, by opting for the social slashing option, the developers are asking larger validators to choose between continuing on the current chain and breaching sanctions, or complying with OFAC and coordinating with other validators to split the chain. Now, this is explained in more detail in this Twitter thread by Justin Bonds, which I'll leave in the description for you as well. It's definitely a messy situation, and there could be collateral damage. The main question then becomes if the collateral damage is worth it. It'll be interesting to see how all this develops over the coming weeks as we roll closer to the merge. It's also worth noting that there is some political pushback against these sanctions too. Lobby groups such as Coin Center seem to be staging defenses, and politicians such as Representative Tom Emmer have also been pushing back. This is a story that's going to run and run, and its outcome will have enormous consequences for all of cryptocurrency. Moving on, though, there is something else to really look forward to about the merge, and that's the change in ETH's tokenomics and their impact on the price. So let's look into that, shall we? I'm sure you've all no doubt heard about the triple halving. It's the massive inflation reduction that will come to the Ethereum network because of the move to proof of stake. With the Bitcoin halving, we know that block rewards halve every few years as we move closer to a protocol-defined limit. This cuts the inflation rate by about 50%. However, with Ethereum, there will be a number of factors that are going to be coming together that will seriously reduce ETH inflation. For one, the move to proof of stake is expected to drop ETH issuance from about 4.13% to 0.49% post-merge. This is about a 90% reduction in the emission rate, which equates to roughly three halvings. So that's where the saying comes from. And if you subscribe to the school of thought that Bitcoin halvings are price positive, a triple ETH halving should make you like three times as bullish. Hey, maths. Now, in all seriousness, though, a reduced supply with a constant demand should be price positive. And then, of course, you also have to take into account the impact that fee burns will have on that supply. As a result of the London upgrade from last year, a small bit of ETH base fees are burned, which also impacts on the available ETH supply. These burns are, of course, variable and will differ based on network use. Current burn rates are about 400k ETH a year, which, if consistent, would drop the ETH supply growth to a smidge under 0.2% per year. But the real kicker is that if network demand on Ethereum surges post-merge, then this could lead to a great deal more fee burns, and ETH could even become deflationary. This is something you can actually simulate for yourself over on ultrasound.money. Negative issuance means you will have a deflationary currency, currency that's gradually decreasing in supply and thus becoming much more valuable. Naturally, this should be price positive. However, this may not have an immediate impact post-merge, as it will take some time for the supply and demand dynamics to play out. Moreover, there are a number of other factors that will impact the price around the merge, some to the upside, some to the downside. For this analysis, I'm going to borrow from a blog post by the one and only Arthur Hayes. It's called ETH Flexive, and I've linked to it below. Essentially, in this piece, he tries to apply George Soros's, quote, theory of reflexivity to the ETH markets, especially as it relates to the merge. This theory was something that Soros actually detailed in a book that he wrote called The Alchemy of Finance. What the theory posits is that there is a feedback loop between market participants and market prices. Quite simply, the actions of market participants around a particular event or situation could actually influence how the event plays out. Anyways, in Hayes's reflexivity model, he has a number of inputs and outputs. On the input side, we have the event, which is, of course, the merge. Then you have the structural flows that will impact on the supply. As I mentioned earlier, the amount of supply is impacted by the amount of burn, which is driven by usage. And when it comes to that, there are two factors that investors will need to consider when choosing which layer one network to use. Firstly, you have mind share, which is basically how well the network is known in the online sphere. It's no secret that the interest in Ethereum, for example, tracks the price. The higher ETH goes, the more people search for it and the more mindshare there is. The more people buy, the higher the price, the more mindshare, and so on and so on. Then, secondly, you have applications. That's driven by how many developers are building on the network. The number of developers is related to the number of users on the network. And given that the number of users is related to the price, that means that the number of devs and dApps must also be related to price. This means that users and developers share a reflexive relationship with ETH. Now, when it comes to the outputs of this model, we have the amount of ETH being burned. As we've established, this is related to network demand, which is driven by dApp usage, and number of users, which is itself driven by price. Naturally, by the transitive property, that means that the level of deflation, the burn, has a reflexive relationship with the price of ETH. In the most basic of terms, a higher price translates into more deflation. Now, there are two outcomes around the merge. It happens or it doesn't. In the case of the former, there will be a positive reflexive relationship between the price and deflation. ETH will be bought today, knowing that higher prices will translate into higher burns using the logic we just explained. However, if the merge doesn't happen, we will have a negative reflexive relationship. People will know that the expected deflation is not coming and hence won't want to hold ETH. Now, Hayes does of course mention that there will be a flaw here. That's because, merge or not, Ethereum is still the dominant layer one and has the vast majority of dApps built on it. Hayes thinks that ETH won't go below $800 to $1,000 in this case, a reasonable assumption. So that's the ETH theory of reflexivity. The rest of Hayes's post goes on to look at the market's view of a successful ETH merge. He takes a look at price, futures term structure, and futures open interest to give a rough idea of how traders are positioned and hedged. He then also looks at a number of trading decisions that one can take in order to both position for a successful merge and to hedge against an unsuccessful one. For the sake of time, I won't go into any of these here, but I do encourage you to read the post at your leisure. It's well worth your time. Now, we of course can't discount the potential for a buy the rumor kind of event around the merge. That is, that prices could fall immediately post-merge as people sell the news. However, because of the unique dynamics around a halving, this cannot be guaranteed, something I tend to agree with. Hayes then concludes by saying that he won't be reducing his position going into the merge or after it. In fact, he may even add to it if the market sells off post-merge because, quote, I believe the best is not and cannot be priced into the market today. Wise words from a trading sensei.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Okay, time for some of my own thoughts on the ETH merge. Firstly, in case the merge didn't make it obvious, this is all my opinion as a non-financial advisor. So, I do encourage you to DYOR in conjunction with your financial advisor. Having said that, I am cautiously optimistic that the merge is going to go ahead as planned. The devs have been working tirelessly and numerous testnet merges have all gone off without any major issues. Moreover, the threat posed by proof-of-work forks appears to have been neutered by the overwhelming institutional support for the proof-of-stake chain. Yet, that institutional support is a double-edged sword, and that's because of the unfortunate situation we found ourselves in due to the Tornado Cash sanctions. It's still not entirely clear as to how the community is going to deal with the risk of protocol-level censorship. But one thing is for certain, no validator is going to risk 30 years in prison, no matter how strong the need for a permissionless ledger. Could the Ethereum developers implement social slashing? Or is the censoring of Tornado Cash transactions a choice that should be left up to the validators? Is it something that we'll have to lay upon the altar as a sacrifice for that holy institutional adoption? I don't know, but it's something I'll be keeping a super close eye on as we approach the merge. And of course, another thing that I'll be keeping an eye on is the ETH price. That triple halving is no joke, and if the price is positively reflexive to the burn, then we could see some serious upside potential as we roll closer to the merge date. Higher prices drive more users, which drives more devs, which drives more dApps, which drives more burn, which drives a higher price. It's a heavenly cycle that maybe even George Soros himself is keeping an eye on. With all that said, though, there are still risks. There is a non-zero chance of a severe, even cataclysmic event around the merge. No matter how many testnet merges one does, it can never really compare to a live push. Hundreds of billions of dollars are on the line, and there is only one shot that can be taken. As such, if you are investing based on a bull case of the merge, as I am, then you have to be aware of these risks. Never invest more than you can afford to lose and manage your expectations accordingly. And that's it for my Ethereum update today. It really is an exciting time and I would love to get some of your feedback on it all. So, are you bullish on the merge? Or are you concerned about transaction censorship? What are your price predictions? I'd love to know in the comments below. Thank you so much for listening to the Coin Bureau podcast. If you'd like to learn more about cryptocurrency, you can visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Coin Bureau. You can also go to coinbureau.com for loads more information about all things crypto. You can follow me on Twitter at Coin Bureau, all one word. And I'm also active on TikTok and Instagram too.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.